We're in the middle of discussing the components of tshuva. And last week we discussed and finished the foundation that sets the way to be able to do tshuva is hakaras hachet, is recognizing the fact that you did something wrong. And we explained what that entails. The next step of tshuva is spoke about this Motzei Shabbos at the Ilui Nishmas Rabbi Shapiro, but I'm going to mention repeat some of it because not everybody was here, and even those that were here weren't necessarily what?
Thank Father.
I am right. Mr. Jacobs. The maybe I wasn't there. The in any case, so I'm going to repeat some of the things that we mentioned then. The next component of tshuva depends on the kind of sin that you did. It is either harata, that you regret doing the sin. After you recognize you did the sin, you regret it. And then the component after that, once you recognize it and you regret it, you stop doing it. Or with a different kind of sin, the order is the opposite. After you recognize the sin, you have to stop doing it, even though you don't regret it. And then, after stopping doing it, then you regret it. And the Shari Tshuva explains that there are two kinds of sins, and for one, the regret comes before you stop doing it, and for the other, the regret can't come until you stop doing it. And that's the following. If it's a sin that you didn't do habitually, you did it one time and it's out of character, then probably you regret it as soon as you've done it and recognize that you've done something wrong, and then you the regret brings you to stop doing it. But if it's a sin that you're in the habit of doing, you do a lot, then we have a klal, kivan sha'over adam aveira v'shona bo nasas lo keheter. Once a person does a sin twice, he repeats it, it already becomes something that he's not sensitive to, and already he has made it in his mind like something that's permissible, and they say the third time you do it, it's a mitzvah already. It's not just permissible, it becomes a mitzvah. And you don't really realize, the fact that you've done it and it's become a habit, you don't really realize how bad it is. And therefore, it's impossible to regret it. And that regret then should make you stop, because you've come into the habit of doing it. So then you have to stop doing it, even though you don't regret it. And then the opposite comes true. Just like doing something over and over again takes away your sensitivity and makes it something that you don't realize is wrong, the opposite is also true. Stopping doing something and getting out of the habit makes you more and more aware of how bad it is. And the example I like to give, since it doesn't apply to me, those kind of examples I like to give, is a smoker, a person who smokes. If you smoked once, right, and it was totally out of character, I know a family in New York that smoking to them is anathema. A lot of people like that today, and when I grew up it wasn't like that, but today I know a family that's that the worst thing they could think that their kid could do is to smoke. And they found out that one of their daughters smoked, what is it, a hookah? That's what it's called. Yeah. And they said that's like 1,000 cigarettes, and at one time they were like distraught. And the girl also, right, realized that she did something wrong. It was a terrible thing. So somebody like that, smoke one time, you can regret it right away. You can regret it right away. I once smoked a cigarette when I was 17 years old. It's the last cigarette I ever smoked in my life, because I wanted to rebel against my rebellion in high school, and I decided that I'm going to start smoking, and that's going to be my rebellion, which I don't understand why that was a rebellion, because my high school rebellion were chain smokers.
That was
in any case, in my
once and stopping was
right. In my estimation, that was going to be my rebellion. So I went out and bought what I thought were cigarettes, but they weren't. They were cigarillos. They were thin cigars that looked like cigarettes. And I remember sitting 11 o'clock in the Beis Medrash, and I was going to light up this cigarette and hope that somebody would walk in and see me, and that would be my, I don't know what exactly what was going to be from that, but in any case. So I lit up this thing and I inhaled it, and I thought I was going to die. Nobody was around. I thought, that's it. They're going to find me dead with a cigarette. That's going to really be great. I choked on that thing, and I took this to the pack and threw it down the toilet, and that was the last cigarette I ever smoked. So I regretted that.
I regretted that immediately.
So that was the end of my cigarette smoking career. So I you do it once, and I regretted it. And I'm sure that, like the family that I said, the daughter smoked once this thing. It was devastating, and right away she regretted it. But people who smoke constantly get into the habit of it. They don't regret it at all. And for them to stop, right, and get out of the habit, only then, as they get farther and farther away from the habit, could they possibly regret smoking. But when you're in the midst of something and it's habitual, very hard to regret it. It becomes addictive, and you don't see anything wrong with it or whatever, and you can't regret it. So therefore, sins that are, you've gotten in the habit of doing them, they are sins that you can't depend on regretting and making that stop you doing it. You have to stop doing it and then regret. Sins that are out of character, that you've done once, there the regret comes before the stopping. Okay, the only problem is that if you, don't regret something, then why would you want to stop it? Understand, if you regret doing something, you think that it's wrong, right? You realize that it's not the thing to do, that you want to stop it. But if you don't regret it, then what's going to make you stop? How are you going to get to that next stage? I recognize I'm doing something wrong. I don't regret it. I love it. How are you going to stop? So one of the ways is that you recognize that you have no other choice. And that can come in many ways. Let's take the smoker as an example. The smoker gets a terrible cough, goes to the doctor. The doctor says, if you continue smoking, you're going to get emphysema or lung cancer or whatever, and you're going to have to stop smoking because usually dead people don't smoke. So I strongly suggest that you stop smoking. So the person doesn't regret it. He doesn't feel bad. He loves smoking. He'd love to continue, except he knows he has no choice. Because if he continues smoking, he's not going to continue smoking. So he might as well stop. So he doesn't regret doing it. He's not doing it because he regrets smoking. And then after he stops, and for a few months maybe he doesn't have that pleasure, and he becomes unaddicted to it, then he can look back and regret ever smoking and getting himself into the situation he did. But he's never going to regret it until he stops. And what's going to make him stop is a realization that he really has no choice. So now what will give a person that feeling? If you're in the habit of doing something, you've recognized that it's wrong. You don't recognize wrong, there's nothing to talk about. You recognize it's wrong, and you're in the habit of doing it, and you have to stop. So it will make you stop. So one thing is that Rosh Hashanah is coming, and you're going to be judged for your life. And if you don't stop, then this is going to go into the cheshbon, and who knows what effect it's going to have on your coming year. And it doesn't only have to be that a person's not going to be around, but terrible things happen to people when their judgment goes bad, and you don't want those terrible things to happen. So that is one thing. You realize that you have no choice, that the Yom HaDin is coming and your life depends on it, and you have to stop because it's going to affect your life, which has a greater effect, thing besides Rosh Hashanah coming, is Zechiras Yom HaMavis, remembering that eventually you are not going to be alive, and you're going to leave this world. It's only temporary in this world, and then you're going to have to face the music of giving an accounting for everything you did in your life, and then it's going to be too late to repent it and to stop. So you might as well stop beforehand, because you realize that there's a necessity to stop what you're doing, even though you don't regret it, because life is short and who knows what's going to be. So it either could be in a more immediate thing that Yom HaDin is coming, or the more general thing of Zechiras Yom HaMavis. So remembering the fact that you're mortal, remembering the fact that you're going to be judged for your life coming up, that could be enough of an incentive to stop something that you don't really want to stop and you're not really regret. Okay, however, remembering the day of death, remembering that you're mortal, is not necessarily a positive thing unless you remember it in the right perspective. Okay, which means the following. And we based it on the following Gemara. Gemara says, La'olam yargiz olam yetzer hatov al yetzer hara. Person should always agitate his yetzer hatov against his yetzer hara and try to win the battle without any aid, right? Do it on your own, right? Just fight your yetzer hara and win. That's the ideal, because the more help you get and the more crutches you use, the less reward you're going to get. So fight the battle and win. If you are successful, fine. But if you're not successful, then you should learn Torah. Torah is an antidote against the Yetzer Hara, and the Torah will help you to fight the battle. If you are successful, fine. If you're not successful, read Kriya Shema. Kriya Shema is also a specific aid. Even though it's Torah, it's a specific kind of Torah, it's more of an aid, and therefore better not to have to do that if you don't have to. But if you have to, read Kriya Shema. And if that works, fine. If it doesn't work, then remember the day of death. Before we go on, I just want to mention one idea, and then we'll get to the major idea that I want to say about this. If remembering the day of death is going to do what learning Torah and reading Kriya Shema couldn't do, then why beat around the bush? Just get to remembering the day of death first. So one idea which we didn't mention the other night, different idea, is the following. It says that when Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to go to the Jewish people and prove that God appeared to him and that he was chosen to be the Redeemer, so God gave him three miracles to show. And he told him, if they don't believe the first one, then they'll believe the second one. It's more convincing. And if they don't believe the second one, the third one for sure will clinch it. So they asked the same question. If the third one is more convincing, then why bother with the first two? Just get to the third one. One of the answers, I think, is this idea, that a person should try to do things on his own without aids, without crutches. Because if you do it on your own, without any outside aid pushing you, then you get the reward 100%. If you have something that is motivating you and pushing you, it takes away the reward, because not all your choice, you had something that was an aid, a crutch. So therefore the Rosh was like this. First go and tell them that you're the Redeemer. Let them believe it without any aid, without any extra added pushing motivation. That's best. If they're not going to believe you, then better they should get some kind of aid than not believe at all. So give them one small miracle. And if that works, fine. If not, then give them a little bit stronger thing. And if that doesn't work, give them the strongest thing, which will make their reward less because they've had this thing that now is pushing them to make the right choice, but better to make the right choice than not to make the right choice. But you try to minimize the crutch in order that you will be able to have the decision on your own, not by having help. Okay. Same thing over here. Right. The remembering the day of death is a real significant crutch. So don't start with that. Start by doing it on your own. You do it on your own, that's the best. If not, then learn Torah. That's less of a crutch because it's very nebulous. And then, if that doesn't help, then get more specific. Read Kriya Shema. It addresses the sin more directly. And if that doesn't help, then use the major crutch of remembering the day of death. That's one way of learning. The second way is what we mentioned the other night, and that's what I want to speak about here. The idea is the following. If you would just remember the day of death without the other things first, it could have a negative effect. Remembering that you're going to die could have a very negative effect on a person. And there are three negative effects that I can think of that will come from remembering the day of death. The first one is a common reaction to feeling mortal, and that is, I will make sure that I remain healthy. True, I am mortal, and I am, what's it called, vulnerable, but I will do everything to make sure that I'm not going to be vulnerable. I will eat only healthy foods. I will jog every day, right? I will, I don't know, whatever it is, I'm going to have, you know, fish oils in every food that I have. And remember somebody, what's it called, that I stayed at had every kind of imaginable vitamins and whatever, and that was going to guarantee that they would be healthy. Now, I have nothing against eating, what's it called, healthy foods. I eat hot dogs all the time, so I what's it called, malumad in eating healthy foods. But nothing against it, right? And I really, a person should watch his health and should exercise, whatever. I mask him 100%. I don't have anything against that as long as somebody else is doing it. I have nothing against it. I shouldn't make fun of it because it's wrong. It's wrong not to do the healthy things. It's wrong. Okay. But when you get in the habit of something, you don't regret it and you don't realize it. We went through that already. In any case, okay, this is becoming true confessions, and that's not what it's supposed to be. But in any case, okay. I'm only doing this because my wife is here and she's going to give it to me afterwards and tell me, what kind of hypocrite are you? What are you talking about? It's healthy things or whatever. In any case, I'm asking. But for you, it's very right to do things that are healthy. But nobody should ever think that if they do healthy things, they are going to guarantee that they're going to be healthy. There are no guarantees. You have to make your ishtadlus. But a person to think, kochi votsim yadi, right? I will be able to guarantee my livelihood by I do the right things and have the right job and hold on to my money, I'll be rich. There's no guarantees. You can have all the right things, have all the right jobs, and then you're fired and you don't have a job anymore. Or you have this expense, that expense. You're not in control. You don't control your health. You don't control your livelihood. You don't control anything in this world except one thing. The only thing that we control is our free choice. That's it. So a person can react to his mortality by reacting with a, I'm going to make sure that I remain alive, do all the right things. And that's absurd. But that is a reaction to recognizing that you're mortal, to remembering that you could die. So you're going to make sure that you're not vulnerable. You're going to do everything to guarantee that you'll be healthy, that you'll be okay, you're going to live tomorrow. That's one negative reaction. Second negative reaction, that a person gets depressed. And they wake up in the morning and say, oh my God, someday I'm going to die, and everything I did is not going to be for anything, and so what's it all worth? Right? There are many people like that, very depressed because they're constantly recognizing the fact that they're not going to be here forever, and who knows what, they could die today, tomorrow, and so what's it all worth? So they get out of bed, they get depressed, they can't function, nothing is worth anything, nothing is important, and they just exist and resign from any positive attachment to the world. That's a second negative reaction to remembering that you're mortal.
About the first, I think when one's in control. Rose mentioned this idea.
Right, hold on with the question so we let me finish the idea and then you can ask questions. And the third negative response to remembering that you're mortal is, okay, some of them are die, so eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die, right? Hefkeres. Right? Might as well enjoy myself because who knows how much time I have to remember the lane, so eat, drink, and be merry. Okay. No chal v'nishte ki mochar nomus, as the Navi says. Those are three negative reactions to remembering that you're mortal. The positive one is that life is short, life is very important, what you do is very significant, and you can't do it after you leave this world, and therefore make the most of it. That's what really remembering the day of death, and, like we said, and if you're doing things that are negative, even if you don't you regret them, but you got to stop because who knows when you'll be able to make that decision if you don't make it now. And even though you don't regret it, you have no choice, you have to stop. Those are the positive reactions to remembering that you're mortal. So now the Gemara says like this, if you're going to just start remembering the fact that you're mortal immediately, you could have come to one of these three negative reactions. So therefore, in order to counteract the three negative reactions, first be involved in overpowering your Yetzer Hara by agitating your Yetzer HaTov over your Yetzer Hara. Secondly, learn Torah. And thirdly, read Kriya Shema. Each of these things negate one of the negative reactions, right? By getting involved in agitating your Yetzer HaTov over Yetzer Hara, it reminds you that's really all that you have that you're in control of. You're making free choices. Nothing else in this world you have control over. And by involving yourself in making those choices in a very intense way, an active way, it'll remind you that this is what you have in your power to do and nothing else, and you won't come to the wrong conclusion of remembering the day of death of Kochi Votzim Yadi, I can control whatever and I'm not going to die because I can control it. Secondly, we don't want you to come to be depressed and think the world's worthless because you're going to die someday, so whatever you did, what's it worth? It's all going to go to somebody else and you can't do anything anymore, so it's all worthless. For that, learn Torah. Torah gives importance to everything in the world. Everything in the world that Torah speaks about tells you how to use it properly or not to use it, and that's the proper way, right, to abstain from it. And every single thing in the world has a purpose, and the Torah gives it eternal value. So by learning Torah, you're not going to become depressed and think the world is useless, but you're going to realize that the world is a very important place, and the things in this world are very important and have to be utilized properly because your entire eternal life depends on it. So learning Torah will counteract the feeling that the world's worthless and just get depressed. The third thing, reading Kriya Shema. Kriya Shema is accepting the yoke of God's kingdom. It speaks about not going after your eyes and your hearts, and in Parshat Tzitzis it speaks about the reward for mitzvahs and the punishment for averus, and therefore you can't just be hefker. You can't come to a philosophy of eat, drink, and be merry if you read Kriya Shema. It's going to impress you that this world is a place of responsibility and you can't just be hefker. So by going through these first three things, you are negating the three negative reactions to remembering the day of death. And then when you remember the day of death, you won't have those negative reactions. You'll have the positive perspective, and it will remind you that life is short, but everything you do here is important, and your entire eternity depends on it. And therefore, even if you don't regret doing things that are wrong, because life is short and you never know what's going to be, you have to stop. That is what the Gemara means. And that is what can make a person stop doing wrong things, even if he doesn't regret them, by recognizing the fact that he really has no choice. And if you're not on the level to remember the fact that you're mortal, right, then at least when before Rosh Hashanah comes up, remember the fact that you're going to be judged the coming year, what's going to be, and if you continue doing what you know is wrong but you don't regret, it's going to go into the cheshbon and maybe tip the scales the wrong way. So you have no choice. You got to stop. Like the person the doctor told, that if you don't stop smoking, you're going to get emphysema. Or worse. So you have no choice. You got to stop. That is what could give a person the incentive to stop something that he knows is wrong, but he doesn't regret doing. Okay, now. Yes. You have a question? No. Okay. Yeah.
The first point, the first potential negative response to Vaskiris Yom HaMavis was feeling in control. We're not talking about here remembering in general. We're talking about here remembering as a reason to do tshuva. And that's not necessarily negative. Someone feels he's in control because the Kodesh Baruch Hu gave a certain amount of, gave the rules of the din. Say, okay, I'm going to affect the din. And you know, I'm going to be a little bit in control of that. That is true to a certain extent. That's not negative. That will inspire somebody to do tshuva.
Remember, we're not talking about a person remembering the din. We're talking about bichlal, remembering that you're mortal. And okay, I remember that my life is going to hang in the balance. Okay, now if it brings me to say, well, what's going to make a difference is what I do, good and bad, and then be an incentive for me to stop doing bad things, that's fine. That kind of control we're not talking about. We're talking about the fact that many people who come to a point in life where they realize that they're vulnerable, come to the conclusion that they can control their health. They're not dying. You know, remembering the day of death is good if you remember that someday you're not going to be here, you better do something. But some people deny, they go into denial. That's the thing. And they deny the fact that they're going to die. Right? And even though it's absurd, but people think absurd things. They don't think about it. They just say, if I continue on the way that I am, jogging, eating healthy food, the problem's never going to come up. They know that someday they're going to die, but they deny it. It's denial. That's what we're talking about.
If that's what we're talking about, just thinking about the vulnerability, the mortality, so then how is that going to help make, what's the positive way then? Positive way is remembering the din,
the positive mortality. Way is that life is short, and it makes a big difference what I do in this world, and therefore I know that someday I'm not going to be here, and I can't control that, so I better control what I can control, my what's going to be for me. That's the positive. The negative is to deny the fact that life is short and say that in a chanami I'm vulnerable, but there are ways of taking away that vulnerability. That's a negative way.
But the positive way, the point is not the mortality. Then the point is what comes after the mortality. Life is short.
I need
to use the time for what's afterwards.
So it's the same thing. A person recognizes that he's mortal. He can have two reactions to that. One is, I recognize that, it scares me, and therefore I go into denial. And therefore, what is my solution to my mortality? Right? Health food. Or a person can accept that mortality and realize that it's a fact. And now, if that's the case, I have to do something about it in a positive way. So I can't control what I'm going to do in this world, but at least I can control what's going to be in the next world. Right? So I recognize what I control, what I can't control. The first way is denying that I can't control my physical state in this world. The second way is accepting it and then taking what I can control and getting involved in that. One's a positive reaction to remembering your mortality. One's a negative reaction. Yeah.
Am I hearing that part of this is about staying positive?
Saying what?
Positive. Instead of operating with fear, desperation, staying positive about the fact that we're all mortal.
Yeah.
And approaching anything I do in...
Right. The Sfarno says that's the reason why we're mortal. That was one reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Adam HaRishon a death sentence. It wasn't to punish him. It was because the Rabbeinu Shlom said, since you're going to use your Yetzer Hara in a negative way, okay, if life is unlimited, there's not going to be any incentive to do the right things. Because you're always going to push it off, and I'll do it tomorrow, and it's not so terrible. Therefore, the Rabbeinu Shlom said, your life's not going to be unlimited. You only have a certain amount of time here, which ultimately is a short time. And even 120 years, a short time. Okay, for you youngsters, that doesn't sound right. But for us people who are like, you know, over the halfway point, 120 years, a short time. So it's not long. It goes by in the twinkling of an eye. Okay, when you're in school, right? I remember every month was years. A year was like 20 years until another year came. Now I look around, it's another year already, and it was just the other year. It just started the last year. It's unbelievable. It's, you know, you can hear it, you don't believe it. I'm telling you, somehow, as you live longer, the Rabbeinu Shlom puts you on fast forward, and it gets faster and faster and faster every year. Right? It's a metzius. I don't know why it's like that, but I used to hear from my parents like that, my grandparents. I never believed them, but you don't have to believe me, but I'm telling you it's true. So it's a very short time. So the Rabbeinu Shlom told Adam and Chava, you're not going to live forever, and you're going to have to come to the realization that there's going to be an end that you're going to have to accept, and therefore you're going to have to make the most of life because it's short. And important. When you don't have a lot of something, then it becomes more valuable. So it wasn't a punishment. It was a tikkun for wasting your life and doing the wrong things. Maybe if you know you don't have all that amount of time, you'll do the right things. You'll appreciate it. That was the idea. Yeah, so recognizing that you're mortal can have a very positive... It was meant to be positive. It wasn't meant to be negative. It wasn't meant to be a punishment. It was meant to be a tikkun. That's what the Svarno says. Okay. In any case, so that is the next component of tshuva. If it's sins that you're in the habit of doing, which unfortunately many of us have many of those kinds of sins. So the next shlav is recognizing that you don't have the choice, even if you don't regret it, stop. Yes.
Some
of these sins are so used to doing it, we're not only into a heta, but perhaps even into a mitzvah. So even with all these three things, it's like being word-blind.
You're word-blind and you don't know that the word is spelt incorrectly.
Okay, but that's what we spoke about last week. So we're talking where Enoch Inami, you got into the habit and you even thought it was a mitzvah, but you recognize now that it's wrong. That's the first thing. You have to at least recognize it's wrong. Once you recognize it's wrong, you still can't regret it because you're in the habit of doing it. That much, you may recognize it's wrong intellectually, but you're not going to feel regret because it's habitual. Then you have to come to these things to get the regret.
But your eyes, how do you recognize
that this... that's something that you're in the habit or that you've distorted or what's it called? You close your eyes to the fact... That was last week's. That you need hakara sachet. That you need the first step to recognize if it's wrong. That's a whole different ballgame. After you recognize it's wrong, then it's possible that you'll recognize it's wrong, but you won't regret doing it. Okay. Next thing is regretting. Okay, so at some point you got to come to regret what you did, because that is one of the components of tshuva. Now we're starting already with the major component to correct the sin. Till now, all you've done is recognize your sin and stop doing it. Now, you got to correct it. So what corrects it is, you regret doing it, which we'll explain how that works, and you commit yourself not to do it again. Those are the two major components of tshuva. Regret and commitment for the future. Charata and kabbalah ha'asid. Those are the two major components of tshuva. There is a machlokes between the Rambam and the Shari Tshuva, at least the way I understand it, which of those two is the main thing. There's two ways of looking at it. Mamish the opposite. One is that the major idea of Tshuva is the commitment for the future. I'm not going to do this again. In order, though, to make a strong commitment, you have to regret it, because if you don't regret it, you're not going to make a strong commitment not to do it again. So the regret is a means of getting a strong commitment not to do it in the future. That's one way of looking at it. That pretty much is the Rambam's way. The Shari Tshuva says the opposite. Really, the main component of tshuva is regretting. And the more you regret, the more the tshuva is effective. The only thing is that if you don't commit yourself not to do it in the future, then obviously you don't regret it. How much you regret it is going to affect how much you're not going to do it again. If you really regret it, what are you going to do it again? But if you're going to do it again, then you obviously don't regret it. So according to the Shari Tshuva, the main tshuva is the regret, and the not doing it again is only a measure of how much you regret. It's a result of your regret. According to the Rambam, it's just the opposite. The main tshuva is your commitment not to do it again. But you're not going to be able to commit yourself strongly if you don't regret it. So the regret is a function of commitment, according to the Rambam, and the commitment is a function of the regret, according to the Shari Tshuva. And we'll discuss that at some other shiur in the future, more in depth, the differences between the two. But in any case, at this point, I just want to speak about the regret itself. We start speaking about it. Now that you've gotten to the point where you can regret doing the sin, what do you regret? The Shari Tshuva says regret is a word that encompasses many, many different possibilities. For instance, if you drop a shekel, right, and lose it, you regret it. Okay, you regret it. I just had a case like that yesterday. I dropped some coins and they went under my car. So I figured when nobody's going to go under my car to get them anyway, so I'll pull the car back and then I'll get the coins. And there was a truck that parked right next to me, and it was almost impossible to get out. So the guy in the truck, instead of moving his truck, comes out, and he's guiding me to go back, but I couldn't just go back and stop. It was a whole process. As I'm going back, I see in front of me a guy who walks by, sees the coins, picks them up, and goes. I wasn't very interested in running after the guy, but that was, you know, the Rebbe wanted to show me, you think you're going to get those coins, what's it called? I'm going to put this truck here. And the guy walked by, he said, oh, coins. That was the end of that. I regret it. I regretted the fact that I didn't get to pick up the coins. I didn't know what they were even. That's a regret. But if you lose your job, you regret it a lot more. If you lose your livelihood, you regret it even more. You lose your house, your family, whatever, you regret it even more. You know, the flood comes and wipes out everything. It's also regret. So there are many, many levels of regret. They're all called the same thing. They're all called harata. So how much you regret doing the sin depends on how you really understand how bad it was. So what kinds of things will give you the incentive to regret the sin properly, right, intensely? Because again, the more regret, the more you'll be committed not to do in the future. Or according to the Shari Tshuva, the more regret, the more your tshuva is an effective tshuva. So let's start with one or two ideas, and next week we'll continue with a few more. What could a person regret? We'll save what I usually say is the first thing for next week, because it's more extensive. Let's speak about some more simple things. One thing a person can regret is, because he sinned, is he acted like an animal. If you think about it, what's the difference between an animal and a human being? Or a mature human being and an immature human being? Animals function on immediate gratification. What will make me feel good? That is the only cheshbon an animal has. It sees something in front of it that it looks good to eat, it eats it. It doesn't make any cheshbonos. Am I going to get a stomachache? Am I going to be fleshik? Or any other these cheshbonos that a person makes before he eats something that may be delicious, but what would be the ramifications, you know, the next 6 hours or the next day or whatever? So that's how animals function. Immature people, children also function like that. They don't think, what are the repercussions? They do what they want to do now. And they don't think what is going to be in the future. Mature people don't function like that. They think about what the repercussions are going to be, and they function according to their mind, not according to their taiva, not according to their desires. The desires are not the main the major thing that drives people is not their drives, it's their seichel. They do it because it's the right thing, wrong thing, it's beneficial in the future, not they make a cheshbon. They function intelligently. The more you're like an animal, the more you don't function intelligently. You just follow your instincts and drives, and that's mamash like acting like an animal. A person doesn't think about this, so it doesn't bother. But if you think about it, it could really bother you that you acted like an animal, not like a human being. And that could be one source of regret. I regret doing the sin because I did the sin because I didn't think. And I just acted on impulse. And animals and children act like that. And I'm not a child and I'm not an animal. And it's embarrassing to act like a child and an animal. So that's a little higher, you have to be a little bit more sophisticated to be able to come to regret doing a sin because of that reason. Okay? It takes a certain amount of intelligence and refinement. if you're not that intelligent and you're not that refined, this is not going to be the thing that makes you regret doing the sin. Okay. So there are other things that will make a person regret doing a sin. And Amir Hashem, next week we'll go into a great detail about some of them. The ones that you don't have to be all that refined, you just have to be a minor. And all of these things, if you don't believe in all of this, nothing's going to make you regret doing a sin. But for the most part, if you're a believing person, right, you have emunah, then there are things that will give you the incentive to regret. And some things we'll see, even if you don't have too much emunah, right, but you have a little bit, then there are things also that will push you to have regret that you don't think of, but that will come from the outside to make you have regret. And that we'll get to next week in Mitzvah.